Part 2. Chapter 1. The Dream of Pride. Lucaria has just announced that she can't go on living here, and that she is going away as soon as her lady is buried. I knelt down and prayed for 5 minutes. I wanted to pray for an hour, but I keep thinking and thinking, and always sick thoughts, and my head aches. What is the use of praying? It's only a sin. It is strange, too, that I am not sleepy. In great, too great sorrow after the first outbursts, one is always sleepy. Men condemned to death, they say, sleep very soundly on the last night. And so it must be. It is the law of nature. Otherwise, their strength would not hold out. I lay down on the sofa, but I did not sleep. For the 6 weeks of her illness, we were looking after her day and night, Lucaria and I together with a trained nurse whom I had engaged from the hospital. I spared no expense. In fact, I was eager to spend my money for her. I called in Dr. Schroeder and paid him 10 rubles a visit. When she began to get better, I did not show myself so much. But why am I describing it? When she got up again, she sat quietly and silently in my room at a special table which I had bought for her too about that time. Yes, that's the truth. We were absolutely silent. That is, we began talking afterwards, but only of the daily routine. I purposely avoided expressing myself, but I noticed that she, too, was glad not to have to say a word more than was necessary. It seemed to me that this was perfectly normal on her part. She is too much shattered, too completely conquered, I thought, and I must let her forget and grow used to it. In this way we were silent, but every minute I was preparing myself for the future. I thought that she was, too, and it was fearfully interesting to me to guess what she was thinking about to herself then. I will say more. Oh, of course, no one knows what I went through, moaning over her in illness. But I stifled my moans in my own heart, even from Lucaria. I could not imagine, could not even conceive of her dying without knowing the whole truth. When she was out of danger and began to regain her health, I very quickly and completely, I remember, recovered my tranquillity. What is more, I made up my mind to defer our future as long as possible, and meanwhile to leave things just as they were. Yes, something strange and peculiar happened to me then. I cannot call it anything else. I had triumphed, and the mere consciousness of that was enough for me. So the whole winter passes. Oh, I was satisfied as I had never been before, and it lasted the whole winter. You see, there had been a terrible external circumstance in my life, which up till then, that is, up to the catastrophe with my wife, had weighed upon me every day and every hour. I mean the loss of my reputation and my leaving the regiment. In two words, I was treated with tyrannical injustice. It is true my comrades did not love me because of my difficult character, and perhaps because of my absurd character, though it often happens that what is exalted, precious, and of value to one, for some reason amuses the herd of one's companions. Oh, I was never liked, not even at school. I was always and everywhere disliked. Even Lucaria cannot like me. What happened in the regiment, though it was the result of their dislike to me, was in a sense accidental. I mention this because nothing is more mortifying and insufferable than to be ruined by an accident which might have happened or not have happened from an unfortunate accumulation of circumstances which might have passed over like a cloud. For an intelligent being it is humiliating. This is what happened. In an interval at a theatre, I went out to the refreshment bar. A hussar named A came in and began, before all the officers present and the public, loudly talking to two other hussars, telling them that Captain Bezumtsev of our regiment was making a disgraceful scene in the passage and was, he believed, drunk. The conversation did not go further, and indeed it was a mistake, for Captain Bezumtsev was not drunk, and the disgraceful scene was not really disgraceful. The hussars began talking of something else, and the matter ended there. But the next day, the story reached our regiment, and then they began saying at once that I was the only officer of our regiment in the refreshment bar at the time, and that when A, the hussar, had spoken insolently of Captain Bezumtsev, I had not gone up to A and stopped him by remonstrating. But on what grounds could I have done so? If he had a grudge against Bezumtsev, it was their personal affair, and why should I interfere? Meanwhile, the officers began to declare that it was not a personal affair, but that it concerned the regiment, and as I was the only officer of the regiment present, I had thereby shown all the officers and other people in the refreshment bar that there could be officers in our regiment who were not oversensitive on the score of their own honour and the honour of their regiment. I could not agree with this view. They let me know that I could set everything right if I were willing, even now, late as it was, to demand a formal explanation from A. I was not willing to do this, and as I was irritated, I refused with pride. And thereupon I forthwith resigned my commission. That is the whole story. I left the regiment, proud but crushed in spirit. I was depressed in will and mind. Just then it was that my sister's husband in Moscow squandered all our little property and my portion of it, which was tiny enough, but the loss of it left me homeless, without a farthing. I might have taken a job in a private business, but I did not. After wearing a distinguished uniform, I could not take work in a railway office. And so, if it must be shame, let it be shame. If it must be disgrace, let it be disgrace. If it must be degradation, let it be degradation. The worse it is, the better. That was my choice. Then followed 3 years of gloomy memories, and even Vyazhimsky's house. A year and a half ago, my godmother, a wealthy old lady, died in Moscow, and to my surprise left me 3,000 in her will. I thought a little, and immediately decided on my course of action. I determined on setting up as a pawnbroker, without apologizing to anyone. Money, then a home, as far as possible from memories of the past. That was my plan. Nevertheless, the gloomy past and my ruined reputation fretted me every day, every hour. But then I married. Whether it was by chance or not, I don't know. But when I brought her into my home, I thought I was bringing a friend. And I needed a friend so much. But I saw clearly that the friend must be trained, schooled, even conquered. Could I have explained myself straight off to a girl of 16 with her prejudices? How, for instance, could I, without the chance help of the horrible incident with the revolver, have made her believe I was not a coward, and that I had been unjustly accused of cowardice in the regiment? But that terrible incident came just in the nick of time. Standing the test of the revolver, I scored off all my gloomy past. And though no one knew about it, she knew. And for me, that was everything. Because she was everything for me. All the hope of the future that I cherished in my dreams. She was the one person I had prepared for myself, and I needed no one else. And here she knew everything. She knew, at any rate, that she had been in haste to join my enemies against me unjustly. That thought enchanted me. In her eyes, I could not be a scoundrel now, but at most a strange person. and that thought, after all that had happened, was by no means displeasing to me. Strangeness is not a vice. On the contrary, it sometimes attracts the feminine heart. In fact, I purposely deferred the climax. What had happened was meanwhile enough for my peace of mind and provided a great number of pictures and materials for my dreams. That is what is wrong, that I am a dreamer. I had enough material for my dreams and about her. I thought she could wait. So the whole winter passed in a sort of expectation. I liked looking at her on the sly, when she was sitting at her little table. She was busy at her needlework, and sometimes in the evenings she read books taken from my bookcase. The choice of books in the bookcase must have had an influence in my favour too. She hardly ever went out. Just before dusk, after dinner, I used to take her out every day for a walk. We took a constitutional, but we were not absolutely silent as we used to be. I tried, in fact, to make a show of our not being silent, but talking harmoniously. But, as I have said already, we both avoided letting ourselves go. I did it purposely. I thought it was essential to give her time. Of course, it was strange that, almost till the end of winter, it did not once strike me that, though I loved to watch her stealthily, I had never once all the winter caught her glancing at me. I thought it was timidity in her. Besides, she had an air of such timid gentleness, such weakness after her illness. Yes, better to wait, and she will come to you all at once of herself. That thought fascinated me beyond all words. I will add one thing. Sometimes, as it were purposely, I worked myself up and brought my mind and spirit to the point of believing she had injured me. And so it went on for some time. But my anger could never be very real or violent, and I felt myself as though it were only acting. And though I had broken off our marriage by buying that bedstead and screen, I could never, never look upon her as a criminal. And not that I took a frivolous view of her crime, but because I had the sense to forgive her completely from the very first day, even before I bought the bedstead. In fact, it is strange on my part, for I am strict in moral questions. On the contrary, in my eyes, she was so conquered, so humiliated, so crushed, that sometimes I felt agonies of pity for her, though sometimes the thought of her humiliation was actually pleasing to me. The thought of our inequality pleased me. I intentionally performed several acts of kindness that winter. I excused two debts. I gave one poor woman money without any pledge, and I said nothing to my wife about it. And I didn't do it in order that she should know. But the woman came to thank me, almost on her knees, and in that way it became public property. It seemed to me that she heard about the woman with pleasure. But spring was coming. It was mid-April, and we took out the double windows, and the sun began lighting up our silent room with its bright beams. But there was, as it were, a veil before my eyes, and a blindness over my mind. A fatal, terrible veil. How did it happen that the scales suddenly fell from my eyes, and I suddenly saw and understood? Was it a chance, or had the hour come? Or did the ray of sunshine kindle a thought, a conjecture in my dull mind? No. It was not a thought, not a conjecture, but a chord suddenly vibrated. A feeling that had long been dead was stirred and came to life, flooding all my darkened soul and devilish pride with light. It was as though I had suddenly leaped up from my place, and indeed, it happened suddenly and abruptly. It happened towards evening, at 5 o'clock, after dinner.